Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U. Run Catalina.com. The Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th. Everysite.com, the coolest new technology around. And our Challenge Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And check out any of our interviews on Babbittville and on iTunes. Our next guest has won five Ironman 70.3 events. Plus, this last weekend, he took second, which to me is sort of a win because he finished second to the hottest guy in the world, Jan Frodeno, at Ironman Dubai. Mr. Josh Amberger joins us. Josh, how are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm good, thanks. How's things?
Everything is wonderful. It was really nice to get to meet you last week. I've had a chance to read about you for a while, but hadn't had the opportunity to meet you. I like somebody who collects vinyl. That impresses me. Is that something growing up? You were always into records?
I've always been heavily into music. I've grew up playing a lot of instruments. I started collecting records about 6 years ago because CDs are totally out of date right now. I kind of just started collecting out of just wanted to, feel like a bit more involved with music rather than just downloading off iTunes or something. Have a tangible connection to the music again. Vinyl sort of really worked well for that. And yeah, I think I've been collecting for 7 years now. So.
And what mainly hard rock? Metal?
Metal, like real heavy underground stuff. So anything from sort of death metal, doom metal, black metal to drone and soundscape stuff. So.
Love that. Yeah. So growing up, we're obviously most Australian kids grow up in the surf lifesaving and all the rest. So was swimming number one for you growing up? What were your sports?
Yeah, for sure. I started swimming when I was 8 months old. It's pretty common here in Australia for parents to get their babies in the water and just get them to splash around. And I think I started doing laps when I was about four. So. And we've got a really, really active junior swim program here in Australia, and you can start racing from about the age of five. So I swam full time until I was about 14 and just didn't hit that growth spurt that all the other kids did. And all of a sudden I was pretty much irrelevant in about a year, and I was no longer winning national titles and breaking records and so forth. So I was kind of real down and out and looking for something else to move into. So my swim coach at the time actually suggested triathlon. That's been the story since then.
So how old were you when you were a has-been as a swimmer?
14.
So 14, you're basically, they're basically kicking you out the door going, hey, you know what, you better find yourself another sport.
Yeah, it's actually really funny looking back. You put yourself back as a 13, 14-year-old, and, you think it's, you're kind of important and so forth. And, you've got no concept of development and, the plan for the long term. So, it's kind of funny.
So you go from you're breaking records, you're the top of the totem pole, then all of a sudden you're out the door. Your coach recommends triathlon. Did you have success at that right away?
I think I did. I was a fit 14-year-old. The benefit of swimming is that because it's a hypoxic sport, if you do it from a young age, it's really going to establish a really strong heart and lungs. So I think as a swimmer, your fitness is going to cross over into anything. And, you look at guys like Andy Potts and so forth, and they'll probably tell you the same thing.
Sure.
So naturally, I was a fit runner because of my swimming training, and, the bike wasn't too hard to pick up either. So I think it growing up as a swimmer really worked well for a transition into an endurance sport like triathlon. So obviously, swimming is part of triathlon. So
yeah, well, it's the most important. And you know what's interesting with swimming? It's so hard to learn, right? It's such a technique thing that it's people who try to get into it later in life. It's always a bit of a struggle. Talk a little bit about, was the ITU something you looked at? Were you thinking Olympics once you made the move into triathlon?
Yeah, I mean, just on what you said before, swimming definitely is hard to pick up later in life. So for all the amateurs out there, don't feel bad if you struggle with the swim.
Exactly.
Everyone's in that same boat. But definitely the Olympics was something that I dreamed about, and I think I was 21 when I stopped ITU, and I stopped for a number of reasons, but simply I just didn't think I cut it at the short course racing. So, and you know, being a 21-year-old, it's so young in the sport of triathlon, and I'd be surprised if, I mean, I think Alistair Brownlee raced the Olympics when he was 19 or 20, but apart from that, I don't think there's really anyone who's sort of peaked in ITU that young. So I guess it wasn't too much of a sore point for me, knowing that I'd never go to an Olympic Games, but, you know, I was able to accept that short course just wasn't for me and move on from there.
Well, it's one thing to feel like I should have made the Olympic team, but you could look at the times in the racing. Obviously your swimming kept you in the game, but the hard part about the way ITU is now, they're running 28:59 off the bike and they're hammering the bike. But for someone like yourself, it sounds like the bike became a strength for you fairly early, and that doesn't make as big a difference in ITU as it does in 70.3 in full Ironman.
Yeah, of course. If you're a strong cyclist in ITU, naturally people pick up on that, and you end up doing a bulk of the work, which only makes the running harder. So, and the level that everyone's at now, it's just not possible to do a flyer off the front by yourself anymore.
No,
you know, like guys like Craig Walton and so forth in the 2000s could.
Right.
Really still do well at ITU by riding off the front, but it's just, you know, decade and a bit on, it's just a whole other level, and it's just not possible. So, for a strong swimmer and biker in ITU, it's kind of a natural progression into a long-course triathlon, and my strengths, they can really come out sometimes on race day in long course, and yeah.
What was the first long-course race that you did?
I did my first 70.3 when I was 22 in Port Macquarie in Australia.
Yeah. And how'd you do?
I got fifth, which was okay. I remember that day, I think Tim Reed got second, Clayton Fertel won, and Chris Kemp got third. So that's, there were some pretty good guys in that race who've gone on to some good things. Obviously, Tim Reed had a stonking year last year, so actually, I'm going to. I kind of got like a sentimental thing with Port Macquarie. I'm actually going to do my first Ironman there this year too. So,
now, didn't you win at Port Macquarie?
Yeah, I won 2 years in a row, 2013 and 14 at 70.3.
Right, and so you're going to do your first full, did you say, at Port Macquarie? Wow, and that's coming up when?
That's May the 1st.
Now, what's interesting is you've had, you know, like you said, five wins at 70.3, two of them at Port Macquarie. You've had some success, a lot of success at 70.3. Is it tough to transition? At this point, there's, I think, 91 or 92 70.3s around the world. So people can make a living without having to go and do a full Ironman nowadays. Is that just something you want to do full, or is it more along the lines of, well, I want to try it out and see how it goes?
A bit of both. I mean, there's certainly a lot of 70.3s, but a lot of those are getting pulled out from under the pros. They're just not, the WTC just aren't putting a pro race in every 70.3
right.
around. So
yeah.
It's kind of, there's a diminishing number of 70.3s to do as a pro. I mean, that still doesn't have too much an effect on one's ability to make a living out of it. But I think Ironman's, it's natural for someone who loves triathlon and is passionate about triathlon, then specifically long course triathlon, to want to do an Ironman. And it's kind of, I've been doing 70.3 for 5 years now, so I think it'd be nice to get that extra bit of stimulus and excitement behind kind of doing something new again. And I remember the first times that I was doing 70.3, I had totally no idea, and I was, you know, nervous but excited, and it kind of really gave me a new lease of life on the sport, and I really want to, you know, just take that next step and do something new and exciting again. So
when you step up to the full, obviously you have to change your training a bunch. How tough has that been for you?
Well, I'm actually, so I'll get this race this weekend in Geelong out of the way, and then I'll start my first Ironman block. So that'll be obviously the start of February, and with the Ironman on the 1st of May. So I actually haven't done too much volume yet, so we'll see how that goes. We can revisit that later, I'm sure. my coach Cliff English has got some ideas, so... Yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
Now, you mentioned that you spent time training with Sebastian Kienle, who's one of our favorites, 2014 Ironman World Champion, 70.3 World Champion. The guy's done it all. What did you learn from training with Sebi?
I learned a bunch of new stuff. Anything from training methods to diet and just typical, like... you know, mentality and attitude towards training. For instance, one day we did this run which totally blew my mind. It was a 40-minute run, and we went out and we did some trails, but we stopped every 5 minutes and just did a different drill or a different kind of strength exercise where we'd step up onto a park bench as quick as we could, 20 times or something. So we ended up, yeah, doing this 40-minute run with all this crazy stuff in there, and I kind of asked him, what's this all about? And he's like, well, how many 40-minute runs are you going to do in your life, you know, 100 or 200? You know, you've got to, what's the point in doing them all the same? You've just got to do them a little bit different, and a little bit of different stimulus is going to be much beneficial than just doing another 40-minute run, for instance. So, like, lots of little training tips I picked up like that, some things that I've been able to take to Cliff and we've been able to integrate into our own training. So that was, yeah, just an unreal experience. I lived with him in his home. Yeah, it's fantastic, and hopefully we can do it again.
So you were living with Sebastian, and Sebastian goes from being Ironman champion in 2014 and the best guy in the world. But there's this guy, Jan Frodeno, who, you know, Olympic gold medalist, coming into the sport, second at second to Sebi a couple of times, especially in Kona that in 14. Could you see a change in Sebi in terms of the way he looked at, he must have seen that, okay, Jan is somebody I got to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think... you know, Jan's someone who doesn't just want to win. He wants to totally dominate.
And yes.
He looks at someone like Sebastian and he goes, okay, Sebastian's a good rider. That's his best. I want to be a better rider. And Jan's just been able to take his bike to the next level. You know, he rode away from me on the weekend, and the only other person I've had ride away from me like that is Sebi. In the 70.3 World Champs in Vegas. So I think that, yeah, Jan's just wants to totally, he doesn't want to just win, he wants to crush. And Sebastian knows that, yeah, they might be equal on the bike now, and now Sebi has to lift his run. So I think he really had a run focus the last year, and that really shone through in a race like the 70.3 Worlds in Zell am Zee, where he wasn't far off the back of Jan, and he outran Gomez. So, yeah, I think Sebi has definitely identified that he has to work on some things, and, you know, you can't relax as a world champion now in triathlon. There's always someone that's hunting you down, someone who's hungry to take that top spot, and that's Jan at the moment. So,
you mentioned Jan, and Jan is on fire. The guy, you know, won 70.3 Worlds, won Frankfurt, won Kona, won Dubai, and you had a really good race, and you're still 10 minutes back of the guy. And he was flying. When you saw him on the run, or you know, when you saw him on the run, because he was multiple loop course, could you tell how fast the guy was going?
It was actually pretty hard to tell. I could see that, obviously, each lap he was gaining time on me.
Yeah.
But I think he only put 3 and a bit minutes into me on the run, which I'm actually really happy with. But,
yeah.
Normally, maybe I would expect 4, 5, 6 minutes if I was having a bad day, a lot more. So I kind of looked at that as like a really positive thing. You know, just to even be close to him. I beat him out of the water. I rode with him for 45K. Yeah, I've got a lot to improve on, but that's probably the closest I've ever finished to him. So,
and when you have a race like that, and we talked about your 5 wins, when you go against the best guy in the world and you're basic, like you said, you're in front of him out of the water, 45K, you're still with him on a bike, you get second place with a really good field. And to me, that's almost like a win. You have to look at races against top competition and go, you know what, second place on this day was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I had a really rough year last year and got one podium for the whole year. So to come off the back of a poor 2015 and be second to Jan, while it doesn't certainly pay like a win, it definitely felt like a win. And I've never raced as early in the season as January now. So it was always a risk to travel all the way to Dubai. You know, it was 14 hours of flying. But I just wanted to put myself in the race and definitely looking at it like a win.
Cool. So you mentioned 2015 was a tough year. Was it injury, sickness, just you know, running up against better guys on the day? What do you think it was?
Yeah, definitely some injuries. I think so running's been my Achilles heel, mm-hmm. I guess you'd say. It's always been my weakest leg, and I kind of had gotten to a point in my training where I don't think I was able to train much harder on the run, and I wasn't getting better, but I still thought I had more that I could get out of myself. And I started working with a couple of chiropractors back here in Australia who identified some biomechanical things, and I've got, it's not much, but I've got a centimeter short leg structurally on my right side, and that's totally changed my basic biomechanics. I've got like one pelvis that's rotated all the way forward. My shoulders are rotated the other way. My spine's crooked. So we took some measures we can try and improve this and put you in a heel raise and try and level you out. And naturally, if you've been that way all your life, you know, I think they've probably said I've had this thing since I was 14. So since I've had it, you know, for 10 years, it's obviously going to take a while to adapt to some changes. And I certainly had just one thing after another last year. And I ended up in October with 2 stress fractures in my foot. Basically I went the whole year just trying to catch up, trying to train through niggles. And then all that turned into just basically being run down, and I was getting sick every month. Once I had the 2 stress fractures, it was actually a really good thing because I was still planning to race all the way through to December, and I was able to just shut it down in October, which was good because I wouldn't be in this position now. So I took a month off and was able to just rest up and heal. And then when I started training again, I was totally fresh and ready to go, and yeah, I've just been able to totally lift since then.
So is the goal this year, I mean, Ironman 70.3, I'm sure you're already on the start list for Australia for that. But is Kona also a goal this year?
No, definitely not.
Good.
Even if I do have
smart move.
Even if I do have a ripping, yeah. I can, let's say I go win Port Mac and have some good 70.3s and I have enough points to go to Kona, I definitely don't think I'll turn up and race. It's just too hot right now. You know, guys like Jan has just totally lifted it to another level, and everyone wants to beat him now too. So I think Kona, the next couple of years, is just going to be absolutely red hot. And, you know, looking, you know, I've been watching the race for a long time now and looking at all the people. Some guys have good races on debut. A lot of guys don't. That's something I don't really want to, dice with right now. I think if I can concentrate on just doing one or two Ironmans a year, for the next couple of years and really get a feel for the event, and the distance, then certainly I'll look to move into Kona maybe 2018 or definitely by 2019, I think.
Yeah, you are a bright young man. I like that. Because you think about it, you're coming off double stress fracture. The last thing you need is to go, okay, I'm going to try to do Ironman 70.3 Worlds and Kona. Next thing you know, you're dealing with the same thing again. Now, as a young guy, a lot of times guys come into the sport and they swim, bike, and run. And they don't implement stretching and weights and the rest of that. I'm imagining after the injuries that you went through this last year, you're having to do other things besides swim, bike, and run.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think as a long course triathlete, everything's on you. You know, like my girlfriend, she races ITU. She's actually going to the Olympic Games.
Wow, so that's awesome.
She's got a lot of support from the federation, and they can advise her one way or another and provide her with a ton of facilities and give her a gym to work at and give her a gym coach. Well, we don't really have those kind of things put in front of us as long courses. You know, we've got no federation support. It's basically you take the challenge of doing the training, doing the racing, and everything's on you. So the gym work has definitely been something I've overlooked the last couple of years, even longer than that, 4 or 5 years, just kind of out of laziness almost. And I just didn't think I really needed it. So last year was a big wake-up call, and I'm kind of at the age now where I have to decide if I really want to commit 100% to the sport. So I've chosen to make that commitment, and I'm trying to do everything I can to get the most out of myself and the most out of my talent. So, yeah, I've got a big gym program. I see I get a lot of treatment from massage and sports chiropractors. So between all that, certainly a bit of an extra load on top of the swim bike run.
Love that. So a lot of times people will come over to Kona knowing that they're not racing, but come there to see it, because there's something about the feel of that event and watching it live that is different than watching it on TV when you're sitting in an air-conditioned room. Is that something down the line you'll come over and see that thing?
Yeah, for sure. Whether it's this year or next year, it's hard to say. I'll definitely get over there and try and spectate the race and enjoy the pre-race parties and so forth that you can't enjoy when you're competing. It's just hard to say. I'm going to focus on the racing that I have to do this year and the World Championships for 70.3 in September, and then I'll make that choice later down the track.
Love that. When you look back at you've had 5 wins, and what do you think? And a lot of times people look back and think, it's not necessarily that win that was the most important race to them in their career. What do you look back at as the most important race for you?
I think definitely I finished 7th place in the World Championships in Las Vegas in 2012.
Yeah.
And that was only my third 70.3 ever.
Wow.
I think that's probably my proudest moment, because I went into the race with absolutely no expectations, and just wanted to have a good day and see what came of it. And I was able to ride with the front pack with guys like Crowley and Bevan Doherty and so forth, and get off and still on my own on the run. And it was something I hadn't really trained that much for. Back in those days, I was preparing always for the high V 50 on 50 chance, which was a week earlier.
Right.
So just putting myself in the race just to see how I went. And, yeah, I finished with seventh. So that's probably, looking back, that's my proudest moment. And I actually haven't beaten that result at a world championship since. So
ignorance is bliss. You didn't know what you were getting into. You just went out there like, exactly. Wow, I'm in seventh. This is great. And I bet you when you look at the six guys in front of you, it's all like, he's in the Hall of Fame, he's in the Hall of Fame, he's in all. You got all the legends in front of you.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they're looking at the list going, who's Josh? What? Who's this guy in seventh place?
Yeah.
Does it surprise you sometimes to think that, I'm a professional athlete. I sort of washed out as a swimmer when I was 14. And now I'm sort of making a living as a professional athlete.
Yeah, definitely. I after I finished high school, I went and studied university for 4 years, and it's always been one of the things where I've never really wanted to do anything else with my life at the moment. I'm totally satisfied with training full time and competing against the best in the world. It gives me something. It gives me a motivation every day to get up and train. And I just, people are always asking me what's next after triathlon, and I honestly don't know. I'm just thinking about one thing right now, and whether that's good for the future or not, it doesn't bother me. I'm just happy doing what I love and racing hard. So, definitely working every day as a professional triathlete is certainly like a dream.
So as somebody who knows Sebastian Kienle really well and knows how much it meant to him to win the Ironman, would you be surprised to see, one of those classic battles with him and Jan next year in Kona?
Yeah, definitely. Not only are they competing to be world champion, but they're also competing to be the best German.
Exactly. That's a big deal.
It definitely is in Germany. That those guys are attracting mainstream media in Germany. And I think definitely for them it means something. Sebi's not one that's just going to roll over. Those guys, I think, are going to be going tooth and nail for a number of years now. I know Sebi had some injury problems last year. He had a really bad Achilles. I'm assuming he's healthy and fit right now. He took some time off after Kona. So to see him the way he ran last year while battling with the Achilles injury, I think he's got a lot more to offer on the race course. And I definitely think we'll see Sebi get a lot more out of himself in these coming years.
Love that. Hey, Josh, thanks so much for taking time. And how many records did you say you have, vinyl?
Who knows? I think it's close to 300 now.
Oh my God!
I don't enjoy just buying a vinyl either. I've just kind of finished my dream hi-fi setup.
Okay. Yeah. So when you talk about your dream hi-fi setup, what type of equipment are we talking?
The problem is that there's too much. If you want to buy a decent turntable, you have to get the tone arm and the cartridge to go with it.
Yep.
I think all up, it's certainly expensive. I've got Electro Compagnie amps from Norway.
Wow.
I've got a J.A. Michelle turntable and tone arm from the UK, Dynavector Stylus from Japan, and Bowers and Wilkins speakers from the UK.
Yep.
So it's definitely a hobby, and it's something that, when I finish the day training, I can just put a record on just totally chill out and relax. So,
did you ever watch the movie High Fidelity?
Yeah. Actually, no, I haven't.
You need to watch High Fidelity. It's guy owns a record store. You'll love it. You'll love it. I think you dig it. I think you would dig it. Hey, thanks, Josh, for taking so much time to chat. Really, really an honor to get to meet you over the phone and to spend time with you last week in Dubai. That was an awesome race. Love seeing a young guy coming up there in second place in a big field like that. Congratulations.
Thanks, Bob. It was great to meet you, too. And hopefully we'll be doing some more interviews post-race again soon.
I love it. Again, we are brought to you by Ironman U, RunCatalina.com, EverySite.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on BabbittVille.com or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.